Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the I Am Studios. And I have been looking forward to this episode for quite a while because of the importance that it's going to have for the community of Los Angeles, specifically for a group of people that I do not focus enough attention on because they have such a major impact in Los Angeles. I'm here with Jose Velasquez, a.k.a. Jose, comedian. He has a special on Apple TV Prime Video called The Salvadoran, but he's also a cultural ambassador for Salvadorian people here in Los Angeles and beyond. Now, go first of all,
I was going to say self-appointed Salvadoran culture ambassador.
Well, self-appointed, but the thing is, doing the research, it keeps coming up. I mean, you were, I don't want to jump ahead here, but you did a Washington Nationals game in Washington where you were like the representative for the heritage and the culture. So, I mean, it goes beyond LA, Dodgers. I mean, it's a pretty big deal, but first and foremost, welcome and thank you for being here, man.
I just want to say I'm a fan. Just want to start off. I'm a fan from the very beginning, from the newspaper days on TikTok. You are our generation's Hugh Hauser.
Well, dude,
first, if you don't know who Hugh Hauser is,
first and foremost, I would dream of following in those footsteps. And thank you. And I know you are a supporter, and I do appreciate that. It is very meaningful. But going back to the newspaper days, that's so for those that may not know, LA Minute started. I still subscribe to both LA newspapers, the Daily News and LA Times. But my initial episodes and how LA Minute started was me holding up the LA Times backwards, by the way, because I didn't even know how to invert the screen. magazine, and I'd be like, here are two or three stories about Los Angeles and people that evolved into LA in a minute. But we're not here to talk about me.
Yes, we are. I want to talk about Evan.
All right, we got to switch chairs then.
Ahora estamos aquí con el podcast número uno. We're going to do it in Spanish.
Well, yo hablo un poco de español. Mi esposa es mexicana, so aprendí un poco. Estamos.
Y I should have ordered putacos.
Oh. Okay, first and foremost, got to give a shout out to my awesome sponsor, Culver City Toyota. Go see George. He's got $500 in dealer cash on a new or pre-owned Toyota. Get your Corolla, your Camry, your RAV4, your Prius. Go see George. And also note, they are giving back to the community. They were giving a free rental to anybody affected by the fires. Again, reach out to George, Culver City Toyota. That still applies to you. They are some great people. It's a great dealership, and they are an awesome sponsor. But dude, let's get into it. I'm excited. So I don't know. Here's where I want to start. First and foremost. All right. Salvadoreño. Tell me.
Salvadorian.
Yes.
So, and Salvi is the other one.
Oh, yes. Well, I don't even know. I don't even know if like I go there with it. Tell me. Let's start right there what your take is just on the, because I'm going to be saying that word. So I want to at least know the proper Jose approved term for all the rest
of
the show.
I'll give you the lowdown. Yeah. So there's many variations of spelling it, right? So we got Salvadorian, R-I-A-N, R-E-A-N, and R-A-N. The correct way of spelling it in the English language, in academics, in documents, is Salvadoran, R-A-N.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the correct spelling.
Which is the name of your special as well, right?
Right. Okay. So that was the whole thing in what we were going to name it. It was the first comedy special out talking about Salvadoran culture.
Yeah.
So I wanted to name it something where it stood out. There was no question about it. And I was like, well, Jose the Salvadoran. I was going to do the Salvadorian,
yeah,
but that's the incorrect spelling. And so people in the group were like, you can't put Salvadorian because then you're misspelling it. I'm like, but that's the...
Yeah, that's
how I grew up, R-I-A-N.
Okay, so my operations manager, partner, friend in Intimate Media, Gloria, she's also Salvadorian. Okay, Salvadorian. But she also wanted to know how the proper spelling. That was one of her first inquiries.
Very controversial. Salvadorian. I grew up using the word Salvadorian. You see it in restaurants, yep. Salvadorian food, Salvadorian pupuseria. But once Salvadorian culture became more mainstream,
yeah,
obviously more people started writing about it, printing about it. And so then the Salvadoran, R-A-N,
yeah,
started becoming more, you know, scene. And so you're like, oh, well, what is this Salvadoran? I was like, what is that? Doesn't even make sense.
Gloria said specifically, she said, it sounds like it's missing something.
It sounds like it's missing something. But it's how it's spelled, you know, correctly. The correct
would
way
you
spelled.
Say that's maybe the anglicized version, the white way of spelling it, or does that come from
that's
somewhere?
What I thought at
yeah.
first,
yeah.
But my drama teacher from high school, who's an English teacher,
yeah,
we were talking about it. She's like, well, this is why it's spelled that way. And I was like, oh, well, then that makes sense.
Interesting. Okay.
So it's not like, it's just the English language.
All right. We're going to.
So I'm not going to blame white people.
I'm going to say Salvadorian. Can I say it? So what do you think?
So you can spell it however you want, but I guess when it goes into print and you're using it for stuff, the correct spelling is Salvadorian.
All right, remember that if we're doing captions.
This is what I'll do for people on the videos. I'll spell it one way, say it one way, and then in the description, I'll spell it the third way.
Perfect. Good. Just so keep if I get the guessing.
If I get the I army on me, it's like, oh, this is I put it here. This is I spelled it correctly. If I get the EAN people, I was like, well, this is what I wrote here.
Covering all your bases. Here's why I thought it was important, okay, is because there are over 400,000 Salvadorians. Oh, man, this is going to be a thorn in my side this entire episode. I'm going to tell you right now. But there are over 400,000 Salvadorians in Los Angeles.
Second largest population in Los Angeles. Third largest population in the nation.
Dude, so he's taking my... This guy is an Ellie in a minute guy because this is kind of, I was about to just throw those down. But that is hugely significant.
Yeah.
Okay. And now I can say, as Ellie in a minute, I try to cover the extremely rich tapestry of races, ethnicities, people throughout Los Angeles. And, you know, I've undercovered the Salvadorian culture. I was supposed to, and I got to give a shout out. I got right here, the Salvi Soul cookbook from Carla Vasquez.
Shout out to Carla.
This is the first cookbook ever printed on by a major publisher in the United States that's a Salvadorian cookbook. And she and I have had some awesome conversations. We were supposed to go to the Salvadorian corridor. It never manifested. And I've kind of been kicking the can down the road, but it's an important culture with an important impact on Los Angeles. And you, again, as I don't want to overplay that word ambassador, but you are a very high profile person whose profile continues to grow and shining that positive light for your people in Los Angeles. I mean, talk about that for a second.
Yeah, and that was very intentional. Growing up, like, I always felt underrepresented, right? Yeah. Like, especially in L.A., like, the largest population is Mexicans, right? Yeah. And so I always felt like, okay, well, like, I'm just Salvadorian. Like, you know, my buddy PB, who and I, we went to high school, all throughout high school, we didn't know we were both Salvadorian. And so we graduated, right? I had like a New Year's party at my mom's house. He shows up. He's listening to my parents and my family talk. And he's like, hey, bro, are you guys Salvadoran? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, me too. This is years after high school, right? We didn't even know.
Right, right.
And so it was just crazy to me how like we didn't have that culture, you know, that brotherhood, like, oh, somos salvadoreños, right? Yeah. And so growing up, that's how I always felt. When I started doing comedy, I would do Latino nights,
okay,
right? And it was always Mexicans, Mexicanos, Latinos, but
right.
Maybe there was one Salvadorian too. And I always felt, oh, okay, well, so I'm gonna lean into that, right?
Yeah.
Because whenever I said I was Salvadorian, people would always get a reaction. And
what kind of reaction though?
Good and bad. So okay. If there were Salvadoreños,
yeah,
they would shout like, yeah, and then other people were like, boo.
okay.
That's an LA thing.
Right.
And so I thought, okay, when I started getting TikTok and doing all that and noticed the power of TikTok, really.
Oh man.
And I was like, oh, there's a real opportunity to highlight the culture here.
Yeah.
And it was very intentional. I'm like, okay, well.
So was conscious. This is interesting. Okay,
yeah, so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna use what I have and try to highlight the culture. Food, comedy, and culture.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. And just started like going to pupuserias. And when you remember when TikTok started, the foodie industry wasn't like what it is now, right?
Right.
You would see videos of people with food, but it wasn't like,
dude,
today. Now it's a whole industry.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I have so many thoughts on that, but go on. That's for another
and
show.
So when I would start looking at, you know, videos with Salvadoran culture, there was nothing pupuserias, pupusas. I'm like, how come nobody's like highlighting, you know, pupusas?
Yeah.
So I just took it upon myself. I'm going to go to all the pupuserias that I know.
Yes.
And start showing them like other people show other food.
Right.
And so that's what I did. I did a serious, like, I don't know how many pupuserias here in LA, like, showcasing.
I tried to do that research, by the way, because, and I never could get a number on taco shops or taco stands. The one I found was donuts, and the stat was that there's more donut spots than taco spots, which sounds nearly unbelievable, but I think maybe, you know, because there's a lot of them are mobile street carts like that, so you can't get a full accurate count or whatever. But I was trying to do that research on like how many pupuserias or different pupusa spots there are in LA, which is, if somebody can find that out, let me know. By the way,
I think there's way less than donut shops, but
no, but there's still a ton. Like, that's the thing, it's significant. I remember, so my wife who's Mexican, her two of her best friends growing up that still happen to be her good friends are Salvadoran. And it's funny, where you said, you know, you kind of got booze from the audience. She used to say back in high school, you know, there was a little rift between, the two cultures. But
which is what I've learned last year. So I did a national tour with Comedy Booze and Beer. That rift is an LA thing. It's not even like, you know, people in DC, like, what rift? Like, there's not even Mexicans in DC.
Yeah.
I did a show. We sold out three shows in DC. Usually people who show up is a mixed Latino crowd, mostly Salvadoreños. Yeah. DC, 100% Salvadorian showed up. It's a very condensed Salvadorian population in like that DMV area.
Really?
But here in Los Angeles, it's very spread out. So
everybody, all of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny you mention that because listen to this. I got a list. Thank you, Eric Brightwell, by the way. LA's unofficial cartographer. He draws these hand-drawn maps and always does great work with cultures, everything like that. But the communities with the highest Salvadoran populations in Los Angeles, Pico Union, of course, Adams, Normandy, Kadehi, East LA, Exposition Park, Huntington Park, La Puente, Leimert Park, Maywood, Montebello, North Hollywood, Reseda, San Fernando, University Park, Van Nuys, Vermont Vista, Watts, West Adams, Westlake, Whittier, Willowbrook, in short, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Right? Yeah. Which is all...
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it?
Yeah, so do we.
Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today.
DSW. Let us surprise you.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests. Proven in all 50 states, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Over Los Angeles. And again, that's to me one of the things I always come back to that makes LA so dope is you find everybody everywhere, which is cool. But so going back to that, well, let's actually go all the way back, okay?
We're going to rewind.
You were born and raised in Compton.
Born and raised in the CPT.
Get a close-up of that pan right there. But tell me... First and foremost, your parents' journey to getting there.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So the joke is my dad moved us to Compton to give us a better life, right?
Heard that bit.
But really, so they came to the U.S. in 1979, which is during the civil rights.
Right.
Not the civil rights.
The
civil war in El Salvador.
Yeah.
And which was a crazy time in El Salvador. Literally, they fled here, right, for a better life. I grew up in 82.
Okay.
And so we lived in Compton. The Compton house was a little crazy. So the Compton house was a house where we lived with my aunt, my uncle, my cousins, And then people who were coming in from El Salvador would come and stay there for a few months.
Right.
The
right.
garage was converted, so it was like the halfway point for Salvadoreños coming through.
Yeah.
I was the youngest. I was the baby, so I grew up with these older Salvadoreños. My cousins are like seven.
Did you have siblings?
So two sisters.
Okay.
So my sister grew up in El Salvador. She came when she was nine.
Oh wow. Okay.
So I was 2 years old when I met her.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting concept in itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my parents left my sister in El Salvador.
Wow.
And then they came here, had me.
Yeah.
And then my sister came. My grandma brought my sister and my cousins from El Salvador. So I grew up with these older Salvadoreños, right? Yeah. And I'm the baby. My cousins are like 10 years older than me.
Okay.
And so, you know, I grew up with that accent, that culture, right? In Spanish, a Spanish household.
That's good.
Yeah. And so we all lived in Compton together for a long time.
And what do you remember about Compton growing up? Because you grew up in Develop. I mean, that's where you grew up, right? Compton Dominguez High, is that correct?
Dominguez High. He did do his research.
Yeah, there you go, right?
Dominguez High, grew up in Compton during the LA riots era, right?
The 90s. Yeah,
the 90s. Never joined the gang. Shout out to my teacher, Catherine Bork, who really like...
Always shout out to the teachers. We love teachers. One of the most underrated, underappreciated, underpaid vocations in America.
So in our high school, we would have race riots, right? During those times. It was crazy. She opened up her classroom during lunch. Which none of the other teachers really, really did.
What's her name again? I want to say a little.
Catherine Bork.
Catherine Bork. Okay.
If you want to find it. So there's a documentary on her. A minute too, but this is way back when. OTR Town really just kind of highlights her and what she did with the arts in our school.
That was the one where they put on the play. It was like the first play that Compton Dominguez High had in years, decades.
We really couldn't find any like research on like when there was a play.
Yeah.
We didn't have a theater. Still doesn't have a theater, by the way.
Yeah.
We did it in the cafeteria. This white lady, she was part of Teach for America program. And so they were putting in really young teachers all over the country, right? And so I think she was 24 when she started teaching at our high school. But she grew up, you know, she was in the drama department. She grew up with that stuff. And so she started seeing us being, you know, these artists, poets, comedians, right? And she was like, we need something for these kids. We need an outlet for them. And so she started the first drama department at Dominguez.
Wow.
And so I was part of that group. And that really is what like kind of showed me, oh, there's something else here, like, right?
Yeah.
And so her classroom kind of became like a hub, especially during lunch.
Yeah, because it was open. She kept it open.
It was open. And, you know, people who were different and, you know, weren't hanging out in the lunch court or whatever, we would come out there and hang out and just
okay,
be
so,
us.
So you were different. What were you like as a youth? Were you always funny? Were you the class clown?
Always funny. Always a class clown. Never thought about it as a profession. I was just, you know, me being goofy, me being fun, you know, throwing a joke here and there whenever possible.
Yeah.
But that was just me.
Yeah.
That was just me. And when she started doing improv,
stuff
during class.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is fun. Like, oh, this is my element, right?
Yeah.
And so that kind of opened up, you know, like, there's something there. When the film OTR Town came out, her husband is a director, and he took it to different film festivals. And so I would just go with him just to hang out and see people, like, you know, watch the film. And so he would do the Q&As, and then sometimes he would bring me up, and people would ask me questions.
And you're young.
I'm young. Point, right? Yeah, I'm out of high school. I think it was 2002. And I started doing jokes at the theater, right? Like, people are laughing. They have a whole theater of people who just watched the movie, and they're cracking up.
That's cool.
And I was like, oh, wait, this is like stand up. I think if I write something, this could be, you know, this could be something. And so that bug was instilled in me from my teacher, right? Growing up in Compton.
Wow. Okay.
And then I wasn't a part of the gang culture, right? Especially during that time in the 90s, like
when it was serious.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It was a crazy time.
I mean, like, that was known as the capital, for lack of a better term, of gangs, at least to outsiders, you know, like, so that's an interesting growth trajectory for you to be able to kind of sidestep all that.
Yeah, but to her credit, she kind of saw that in people and was like, there's another group of kids here who really need an outlet.
Had you been exposed to stand-up comedy? Did you have any stand-up comedians that you loved or were interested in when you were growing up?
Not growing up. So it wasn't like something I said, oh, I love stand-up, I love stand-up comedians. It wasn't, it was really after that moment of doing like the Q&As, and we were like, oh, what is, like, I think I could do that, like tell some jokes, and started researching comedy, started deep diving into like comedians and, you know, Richard Pryor.
So you went back on
way
it.
Back. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I did research. I was like treating this like, oh, who are these guys? We're Latino comedians. Like who?
Wow.
And I just went into like, you know, Paul Rodriguez.
Yeah.
At that time, I think Carlos Mencia was like blowing up. So he was like a guy like, oh, who is this guy? Pablo Francisco. And I'm like, who are these, you know, these comedians? And yeah, it was just kind of like, oh, this is interesting. Like, I think there's something there.
Dude, so the seeds were planted. You realize you got the taste of the love and the crowd. I mean, again, unplanned, all impromptu at that time. But then you're doing the homework. So then, what are the next steps? Where did that go from there?
So I did all that, right? And I'm like, okay, well, I don't even know where to get started. Like, how do you even like start stand up? And yesterday you posted the video with the LA Weekly.
Yes.
And so here's just, so my buddy and I are at a flea market on Melrose.
Okay.
And I don't even know why we were there. And this comedian that I had just seen on the Conan O'Brien show, late night, right? He did his set. He was at the flea market, like at one of the spots with his friend. And I'm like, I just saw you on TV. Like, you were doing stand-up. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. So I was like, how do you get started? Like, where do I go? Like, I want to start doing this. And he goes, go to the LA Weekly. The back of the LA Weekly has the open mics.
Right.
There was a whole list, right? And so you kind of pick and choose where, you know, it's a coffee shop.
Yes.
And so I would just get the LA Weekly, highlight the open mics, and just start going to these like random open mics.
You really did. And with a set, like you prepped, you had your...
I had my 3 minutes that I had prepared on like, I don't even remember the jokes, but I was okay, I'm prepared. This is my jokes. I did like two or three. And then this one guy was in the crowd. He said, oh, you're pretty funny. How long you been doing it? I'm like, I just started, bro. Like, I'm literally just starting. He goes, I have a show at the Comedy Union on Fridays. You should come through. Bring some friends. I'll put you on stage.
Yeah.
I'm like, what, a comedy club? I'm just getting started. Hell yeah, I'm bringing everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Brought a ton of friends. It was a bringer show. So if you've ever done comedy, a bringer show is you bring people, we'll give you stage time.
Okay.
That's a
fair
trade-off.
Trade. And that's a tough biz, man.
Oh,
I have a friend who's professional storyteller, which I didn't even know that vocation existed, but he's done a little bit of like stand up in his day. I felt he should have done more. He's a really funny guy. But anyway, he went into story. So I've been on the being brought part of that, right? But I didn't know that was the economics of it. There you go, which makes sense.
So I think I brought like 15 people the first time, right? Like I was ready, wrote my material, got 10 minutes. I was like, oh man, I'm gonna have to do my homework. Wrote a bunch of jokes, long time,
man.
Did fairly well. My friends loved it. They're like, oh, you're pretty funny. It was good. And then the guy goes, I'll put you on next week if you can bring people. Bet. Here, telling everybody, hey, I'm going to be at this club. Yeah. Come through. Come see me. I wrote a new 10 minutes because it was the same friends coming.
Right. They are new punchlines. Yeah.
So that's how it went. Like every Friday I would bring a few friends. And the problem was that it was a lot of the same friends. So I needed new material every week.
Right.
So I was writing every week, putting material. And so I would record them. So there was a guy who would had a video camera.
Yes.
He was on VHS, right? Okay. So after your set, you could buy a VHS tape of your set. So every Friday, $10, get my VHS. I would watch it.
Yeah.
I would like critique myself. Oh, this is good. This worked. And I was like, oh, okay. And so that's how I kind of got into like the way I write, you know, my comedy is like, okay, always record it, listen to it, see where the laughs are. Modify it, rewrite, add it, you know, and switch it all up. And that kind of taught me in my own way, like how to like figure out my stand up, right?
I always thought that comedy is one of the most difficult things that you can voluntarily put yourself into, because you're going on stage by yourself with people who are like, okay, funny man, make me laugh. Right? Like, that's a lot. Not just, I don't even want to say pressure. It is pressure, but it's like, dude, evoking that laughter and getting that rhythm and that momentum and building and timing is like, it's an art, man. It's a craft. If it's an art, even if you have a joke that works, or like it hits, then now you got to follow up, and then maybe there's the callbacks and all this kind of stuff. So it's really,
it's a whole process. The trick is you make it look like it's fresh, right? Yeah. On stage.
Yeah.
And it's like the first time you're saying it, we're coming up with this, and it's all fresh. But really, you know, it's tried and tested,
yeah.
Right? Especially for me, like a lot of comics do it different. Everyone's different in their process, right? A lot of comics write on stage and they just, that's their process.
What do you mean write on stage?
So they'll do jokes.
Yeah.
Right? They're riffing.
Yeah.
I said, oh, that worked. I'll keep it for the next one.
Okay.
A lot of them don't actually write. Like, you know. So everybody has their own process. My process is like, I'll write on stage. I'll do it, perform it. I'll record it, either video or audio.
Yeah.
And I'll listen to it. And then I'm like transcribing it. Like, okay, this worked.
Wow. Okay.
And so when I see it on screen, there's like a format that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I leave a space where the laughs are.
Yeah, where they should be.
Where you hope they are.
Yeah.
Where the audio said they were there, right? And so I look at it, and if something looks too chunky for me,
yeah.
I was like, okay, there's laughs missing, or it's too wordy,
yeah.
And we got to trim it down, right? And that just kind of helps me visualize like my set. And so then that's the whole writing process for me.
Let me ask you.
It's crazy.
This is something I've always wondered, right? It has to be memorized, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But obviously you need that flexibility. Like you said, it needs to come off natural. It needs to come off almost first time you're telling this story or this anecdote or this joke. How much, and this is just for me, honestly, because I've always wondered, how much are you like practicing, committing it to memory? And then when you're up there on stage, whether or not you're getting laughs, you're 6 minutes into a 10-minute set. Bro, that's a lot to remember. Because I give talks or you know, like LA in a Minute style speeches at certain things, but it's like a lot, it's really script. My stuff's like, and it's different. So how much of it is scripted? And then you forget stuff. There's things that go on, you get distracted, getting back to your point. How does that process
work? I would say a good 80% of it is scripted.
Yeah.
20% is me riffing, improvising, trying to figure out a way to get into my a set joke that I have, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm weaving. So it's never the same set. It's like a big puzzle that all the pieces fit together.
Okay.
And so I'm rearranging in real time. Like, oh, okay, we'll go here. Well, I'll take you here because I have this bit. Oh, then we'll go here with this.
Yeah.
But all those bits, they're already tried and tested, right? Like, I know this bit's going to work.
Yeah.
It's just me figuring out, how am I going to take you here in this one-sided conversation where I'm only talking and you're laughing?
Because it is. It's a dialogue.
It is.
But it's not. I mean, it is, but it's not. It's a dialogue without words or real contribution from one side. And you got to read that and you got to play that. That's interesting. Have you ever bombed? And do you remember the first time you bombed?
So I'll tell you a story from last year. So last year I pivoted from, so the special came out, right?
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
An hour of material, and now I have a tour. So I'm like, okay, now I got to write new material along the way, right? Yeah. And so I decided, well, I'm going to do it in Spanish now. I've never done Spanish from the very beginning.
Wow.
Right? I speak Spanish. I'm fluent in Spanish.
Why? Is it a cultural thing? Is it you just want a certain audience? What was the, yeah.
So I never did it in Spanish just because there wasn't a lot of Spanish shows for me to say, oh, I'm going to start doing it in Spanish.
Okay.
But with the special, I'm like, well, I can work up to another special. We have the Salvadoran in English and do a special in Spanish, El Salvadoreño, right?
Okay, that's dope.
Keep it in the same. So I can hit all the different spellings.
Good job. Yes. Okay. Okay.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to start doing it in Spanish. So I'm translating a lot of the material. One of the jokes that I had that I was trying out here in LA, right, is the joke is that I'm going to solve the economic crisis. And we're going to do, in Spanish, it's called a cundina or a tanda.
Okay.
Right? And so in Spanish, we're going to do a worldwide cundina, right? It's like a savings club.
Okay.
In Spanish. So people pull their money in weekly.
Cundina?
Cundina.
Okay.
Every week, people pull their money. Like, let's say there's five of us here. First week, you know, we give it to him, all our money. Second week, we give it to her. Third week, we give it to you.
Okay.
So at the end of the run, we all have a pool of money that we received. And it's called a cundina. It's popular in Latino culture. And so we're going to do a worldwide cundina. Everybody's going to get their, you know, their bag every week.
Yeah.
And so that's the joke. So when I started doing it in Spanish, it was working. People were laughing. I take this joke to El Salvador. Which in Salvador is a whole different Spanish, right? We have different words, mean different things. So I'm doing an hour in El Salvador last year. So I'm promoting it. By that time, I have my set that I'm comfortable with in Spanish. Halfway through the set, I do this joke. And in El Salvador, the president's campaign is new ideas.
Okay.
Right? He's running on his campaign on new ideas.
This is Bukele?
Bukele.
Yeah.
And so my joke is that I'm come here to Salvador with newer ideas. These ideas he doesn't have. We're going to solve the economic crisis. We're going to do a worldwide cundina. Silence. I was like, oh, man, this is halfway through my set. I felt like Andy Ruiz, you know, he knocked down the boxer. I'm like, oh, man, I'm down. They don't get it. Oh, shoot. All right, let's keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
Found out later by my aunt, the word is not cundina, it's cuchuval in El Salvador, right?
So people were kind of like,
what is the cundina?
Oh, no.
So that one word.
Yeah. Lost in translation.
Lost in translation. But it was like, it threw me off for a second. I'm like, okay, well, we got to keep going. Got to throw out the other newer ideas.
Dude, so that's, okay, so that feeling, right? Like, that's a terrible, even if you're in a room with, like, your buddies almost and a joke falls flat, you kind of have a little bit of a feeling, but the room full of straight, a big anticipated show.
Yeah, yeah. This is an auditorium in El Salvador. Yeah. We're promoting it and pushing it. And here I am, you know, bombing the joke.
Dude, so how does that?
It threw me off. I felt like Andy Ruiz, the boxer, when he gets knocked down, right? People are cheering him. He's the underdog and he gets knocked down, but he comes back and knocks him out. So my biggest thing was the closer in El Salvador, right? Yeah. I have this closer that I've weaved in the transition of El Salvador, the telling the story of my dad transitioning from his alcohol and becoming, you know, a different man. And so I'm tying it all in together.
Yeah.
I'm like, if this doesn't work, like, I've just bombed the show. Yeah. But it worked. It was beautiful. It was a nice moment. It hit. I'm like, okay.
Yes.
I feel redeemed.
Okay. So let's talk about El Salvador, right? Like, you grew up here. You're born here, grew up here. What was your relationship? Were you able to return to the country often, ever, when you were young?
No. So my parents, I think they went back once when I was younger.
Okay.
It was 89.
Yeah.
And so I was six, seven?
Okay.
And that was my first memory of El Salvador, right? And so after that, like, I never went back. They never went back.
And it was tough. I mean, like, El Salvador had that reputation as being a pretty violent country.
It was pretty bad for a
travel long... warnings and all that, at least from the United States. Yeah,
so. Yeah, for a long time. And so I think my parents went back with my sister one time, but it had been 20 years.
Okay.
It wasn't like, oh, we're going to go in there for the summer.
Yeah.
And it was never the case. And so, you know, for my parents, I think there was a lot of trauma, right? Coming here, fleeing their country, their home, leaving everything behind, right? And coming here to start a new life. They don't speak the language. But, and I think my dad had a lot of trauma from that. And so I think he kind of dealt with it differently, right? Especially during that time. And so he drank a lot during, like, my younger years.
Right.
The man you see now on, you know, social media, that's a new relationship in the last 15 years that him and I have cultivated after his sobriety.
That's awesome. It takes work. It's important, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And for a long time, I felt like, you know, I think he was suffering from a lot of stuff, that traumatic stuff, that depression and, you know, it's very hard, and he's not the only one, right?
It's not just a life change, man. That's completely flipping your life upside down. I mean, again, we hate to go back to the fires, but you think about the people that just lost their homes in the fires, and they have to start all over. Well, at least you can start all over in the same city, community, state. You know what I mean? This is something completely different.
Now imagine having to leave the country.
Not knowing the language.
Not knowing like the language, not knowing anybody. Yeah. Right? Like that's tough. Yeah. And that takes a toll on people. I think it was very difficult for them. We got to do a collab with Volaris, and they flew them out to El Salvador.
Right.
And this is all after, you know, the transition El Salvador has gone through. And to be able to see my parents go back to their home, to see it very different from how they left it.
Right.
Oh man, they came back like with a new sense of like, oh, this is our home. I want to go back next month.
Can you talk to me about that for a sec? I didn't want to get into politics per se, but we don't avoid any topics here.
Yeah,
so no. I want to know what is that perspective, the modern perspective of somebody who had to flee from the Civil War? So
my feelings, especially with my parents, like I can talk about what they feel. I don't know what everybody else is.
Yours and your family. Yeah.
But my family's perception is like our home is back. Like this is, you know, where we left this. We had to leave our home and now it's back. Right. And so there's this sense of like, I belong here. This is where I belong. Right. So they got to go with me to the show in El Salvador.
Yeah.
And we got to hang out. That was the first time since 1989. That the three of us are in El Salvador together.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
And so it was very weird to, we're having dinner at a restaurant, right? And
what city, by the way?
In San Salvador.
Okay.
And we're just hanging out at night, late at night, having dinner in San Salvador, right? Like, that was not the case for people.
Listen, I was telling Gloria before the show, I mean, truthfully, I had a layover once in El Salvador. Ooh, big deal. But the point is, when we got off the airplane for our layover, they specifically said, unless you have a destination, and this was 2009, by the way. So it was either 2009 or 2011, somewhere in that range. But they specifically said, unless you have a specific destination, like, do not leave the airport. Like, they tell the us flyers, they're like, do not leave the airport. It's dangerous. You know, we're like, damn, all right, we want to explore places. But yeah, so different. Okay, so now you're out, you're at night, you're eating dinner. Feelings for your parents are kind of coming back of reconnecting with their homeland.
With their homeland. It's a very, like, it's a weird thing for them to, like, be able to come back and be like, oh, this is our home. This is what we recognize. This is what we left.
What a good feeling.
Before. Yeah, it's very interesting to see, you know, this pivot of El Salvador. Nice. And it's almost like it's mirroring like our, you know, our journey here in the States, right? Like becoming a nationally known culture now, right? Like, we have a cookbook out. Yeah. We're having Salvadoran Heritage Nights at Dodger Stadium. We're, you know, we're in the mainstream. People are watching what El Salvador is doing.
Right.
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 That was not the case. Like, that was, we were like, who are, oh, you're Salvador. What is that? Where is that? Right.
And now it's getting established. I'm glad you brought up that point because I've been thinking about this, right? Whether it was Italians, Germans, Irish, Mexicans, Salvadorians. Oh, man, this is going to vex me all day. No. But, it takes generations for any immigrant group in the United States specifically to, like, get a foothold, get established, develop a profile, and to have an impact that people notice on American society. And it's like you said, now people like you are helping raise that awareness of the culture and where it comes from. And it's interesting. So you went back to El Salvador. Had you been there before?
So, so I got to go back 2021, and then, 2021, 2022, I've been going back for a minute now, but hadn't gone back with my parents.
Yeah.
That was the first time we were there.
What do you feel when you're there?
Oh, man. So it's weird going back or going now because of, you know, social media and stuff and getting recognized in a whole different country.
That's gotta be crazy. Are you embraced? Like, how does it feel? What's the...
So it's very weird. So, like, we went to a hotel and the lady, like, was looking at us, right? She goes, yo lo conozco a usted. And I was like, I know you, right? And it's like, oh, yo lo sigo en las redes. I follow you on social media. And she said, usted es José, ¿verdad?
No kidding.
And that was the first time I heard Jose pronounce José.
Yeah.
Because, right? I spell it H-O-O-Z-A-Y. Yeah, yeah. The joke is, it's Jose, but in English, Jose.
Right.
But they said José. And I'm like, oh, I like José. So yo soy José. And so, yeah, it was like, oh, man, that shows you the power of social media, right? In a whole different country, people are seeing what we're doing here, right?
And yeah.
It was like, oh, I follow you.
That's pretty impressive, man. How'd that feel for you?
Oh, that was a crazy feeling. Like, oh, this is bigger than what you see. You see the analytics, right? It's like, okay, you get a bunch of views. But to be out, not just a different country, different states, and, like, to be able to sell out a show and, like, oh, man, you follow me here in Texas? Oh, man, all right, let's do this. It's insane.
I mean, I got so many questions about this because, again, like, you're breaking new ground. You really are. And you're helping just raise the profile of an entire community that's been here, right? But it's again, just like getting that full foothold and now presenting the culture to the world. One thing that's funny, and I mean, I don't want to go back to pupusas again. In my conversations with Carla, she made it very clear. She's like, listen, Salvadorian cuisine is not just about pupusas, like, almost kind of a, like, please stop talking about pupusas. But the thing is, a lot of white guys like me, you know, now more so.
Pupusas are delicious.
Dude, the curtido is curtido, what makes it. And your domain, curtido.tv, man. Like, I was like, dude, how do you get that? That's such a dope domain. But no, it makes it. But it's funny that they're, like, not as popular as tacos or not even as well known. Now, of course, in LA, like, everybody knows.
I don't think they're as accessible to, like, you can't find a late night pupuseria open in LA, right?
But you got spots on the streets, though. I
see. Yeah, there's spots on the streets, but it's very, like, you can go to a lot of taco spots late at night.
Right, right, right.
Pupusas are a whole different beast. Like, I'll tell you, when we used to do the backyard shows with my mom and she would sell pupusas.
Yes.
It was a week's process to be able to get enough material to sell pupusas that one day. And so really? My dad would go out like at the beginning
more
of the week.
More labor intense? More different ingredients or what?
More different ingredients. Preparing the chicharron, preparing the masa, the curtido.
Yeah.
Like all that stuff is a whole ass process.
Right.
And
right.
So they're not as like accessible.
That's interesting.
To be able to just put together and like, okay, I'll do a pupusa right now. Like, oh no, you got to prepare all that stuff.
It's interesting though, but it's part of that and it's bringing... That's an element of the culture. Like, look, I mean, again, man, you know, you specifically know how important food is in connecting with people and getting people to like have that relationship with you and your culture. And so, first of all, because you brought it up and I neglected to mention in the beginning, you got to tell me about the comedy shows in the backyard with your mom. Give us how that started, how that developed, what that meant for you.
So when I started doing comedy, I was doing shows with, I started meeting Latino comedians.
Yeah.
And these Latino comedians all had their own show, like in different spots. Richard Villa had the Improv at that time, like, and other comedians had spots like in Paramount, right? And Downey, the Del Rio Lanes had a little bar with, you know, comedians were putting on shows.
Stoke.
And everybody had their own show, but I couldn't find a venue that would give me the time. I was a nobody, right? Like, oh, who's this kid? You're gonna bring people? Yeah, right, kid. Yeah. We're gonna give you the venue. Forget about it. So I was striking out everywhere. I was going different places. My buddy Juan, he goes, you should do a show in your backyard. I'm like, that's crazy, dude. How are we gonna do a show in the backyard, bro? Like, and so cut to like a few months later, my mom wanted a cement slab in the backyard. She has a daycare. And so we did this big cement slab on one end of the backyard, and her backyard's huge. And so I'm standing there with my buddy Juan, because he helped.
Where's your mom at now?
Yeah, in Linwood.
Okay.
And so
Linwood, land of legends, by the way. So many like famous people from LA have come from Linwood. Different topics. Weird Al Yankovic, by the way. Back there, dude. Add it to the list. Let's go. Okay, go on though.
So there's the cement slab, right? And so I'm looking at my buddy Juan. I was like, oh, you know what? We should do backyard comedy.
Yeah.
He goes, that's what I told you. And so I was like, I tell my mom, like, hey, I'm gonna sit on show. We're gonna do a show. She goes, uh-huh. ¿Y quiénes van a venir? Like, who's coming?
Yeah.
I was like, well, you know, I'll probably tell my cousins and a few friends. And she was like, uh-huh. ¿Y qué le vas a dar de comer? What are they going to eat? Typical Latina mom, right? Yeah. If people are coming, what are they going to eat?
Of course.
And so my dad was the one with the idea, like, oh, why, we should do some pupusas. And I was like, oh, so we're going to feed these people. My dad's like, oh, la vendemos. We'll sell them.
Yes. Okay.
And so that's how it evolved. It was my cousins. My mom's making pupusas. I sold a ticket for $10.
Really?
My mom sold the pupusas for $1.
Yeah.
Dude, it became an enterprise, come on, bro.
Yeah. You're like $5 at least. No, go on. Yeah.
So the first show, my cousins come. I invite comedians that I've met, you know, along the way who are, those guys are pros. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
My buddy Juan, he's like, we'll set up a stage. We'll do lights. We'll do a background.
Wow.
The whole nine.
It's a big deal, man.
It was a production, bro.
Yeah, okay.
It was a whole production. And so these comedians come in, right? And we have these stage lights. And it feels, when you're on the cement slab, it felt like you were in a theater.
Show.
Like it just show. It felt.
How'd you get the stage lights, by the way?
My drama teacher. She come donated
on.
Them from. Yeah.
Wow. That's so awesome. Yeah. Okay, go on.
And so we had comedians would come in. I had converted the garage in my mom's house at that time. So that was the green room.
Yeah.
And so we had the green room for them.
Right.
We gave them food. You know, because I was selling tickets, I would pay the comedians.
Wow, that's awesome.
And so it was a whole production. And so comedians were like, oh, bro, this is legit. Like, this is real. My cousins would start telling their friends. And so it became a monthly thing, the backyard comedy. Wow. And it just got crazier and crazy. Like, we had a bunch of people. And it was like, we can't, like, this is crazy. And at that time, my mom had knee surgery. And she was like, I can't stand for a long time. Mm-hmm. She goes, and so it just kind of died out. Like, okay, well, my mom can't make pupusas. Then
no pupusas, no show.
That's it. And so we stopped doing the backyard comedy. And fast forward to, you know, during the pandemic and growing to social media.
Yes.
And then right after everything opened up, this is 2021, I was like, I wonder if I could do a show and people would come out. The people that follow me now, would they come out to a show? And so I thought of bringing like the backyard comedy back, but like, I can't bring these strangers to my mom's house, right?
Different story,
promoted on
bro,
social media. And I'm story. Like, okay, I got to find a venue. It's COVID time. This brewery in Pico, Brujeria.
Okay.
We hit them up and said, hey, can we do a comedy show in the back, in the out in the open? And they're very open. They're like, yeah. I said, free. Put it out on social media. Hey, we're doing, I call it comedy, pupusas, and beer. We're going to have comedy, pupusas, and beer. We had 300 people show up.
Of course, bro. For comedy, pupusas, and beer. And I was like, sign me up. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. We're back. We're back. Yeah. So then every month I started finding a different brewery, a different spot. And we just had that concept of like food, hanging out, comedy.
Especially coming off of COVID, man. People coming needed that.
Yeah.
So you're not shy, obviously. But were you doing this legwork, reaching out, finding the breweries, that? Yeah.
All that was self-produced.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So that's that motivation and that drive, right? You consider yourself ambitious?
I would say so, a little bit.
Obviously.
But I never do it alone. You brought up Curtido TV. Those guys, like, that's a group of guys that have been helping me do a lot of stuff.
Okay.
And so the Salvi Avengers, I call them.
So we got to give those guys some shine. Tell me about how you developed like social media, because listen, social media launched you into a different stratosphere, right? So what was it? Was it during COVID that everything kind of took off, and what changed besides everybody being on their phones and their screens all the time? Yeah.
So, you know, during COVID, everybody was, I think TikTok kind of came around at the right time. Right.
Dude.
And so I think everybody who started doing TikTok was just experimenting.
Yes.
On the platform. I was doing repair videos. I was doing...
trying to figure out what was going to stick, right?
Husband, wife videos, whatever. I was throwing everything out,
of
right?
Course.
And so I'm a creative person. I'm just throwing all kind of ideas that I think are funny. Once I saw like, there's like, this thing is a real tool. So this is what I came from digital marketing, right? I did digital marketing for a long
really?
Time.
And so I gotta ask this. Hold on, because that's where I come from. Where did you? What were you doing?
So I worked for. It was a firm that had different businesses. So I took over like their at that time like their websites and their.
No.
We did Google AdWords and we started developing.
So
stuff.
You know all that, huh?
Yeah.
That's the biz I come from, bro. I had no idea. Okay.
So we were doing Google AdWords at the time, right?
Okay.
And so you know how that works,
dude. Yes.
Google is a master of finding new customers, right? You pay them money, they will find your client. And so when I figured out how Google worked, and I'm looking at TikTok, right?
Yeah.
And let's say I do a repair video. All these repair fanatics or people who know these things start commenting.
Right.
I'm like, wait a minute. Like, it's finding similar type people.
Totally.
On this video. So then I'm like, I think there's something going on. So I'm like, I wonder if I take a small business, right, and highlight them.
Yeah.
Would it like drive traffic to them of people who are interested in that business, right? That was the test. That was the theory.
Bro, okay.
So I'm just randomly picking small business that jump out to me. Just like comedy, right? Like if I think something's funny, like, okay, that's going into the set.
Yeah.
So I'm the judge, right? Like, I like that. So I was like, this business, that's interesting as a business. I mean, let's highlight it. Let's see what happens. I did one called La Vela Creations. They do these artisanal candles. Mm-hmm. But their names are very funny, right? Like they have Calmate o te calmas o te calmo, a Vaporú candle. I mean, that's funny already, right?
What's like, Vaporú?
The Vicks vapor, vapor rub.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's dope.
So you light the candle and it smells like vapor
rub. Okay, that's right.
And I'm like, these are funny already. Yeah. Like if I can weave it together in a way and where it's funny and highlight the business, I wonder if it'll work. I do the video, did a voiceover. Million views, right? their Etsy shop goes crazy. They have to shut it down. Too many orders. I'm like, we broke their Etsy shop.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, there's something here.
Yeah, and that's a great feeling, dude.
Yeah, let's be honest.
That's a great feeling.
So I'm like, well, all right, let's take that same formula, right? Same editing style, same voiceover.
Yeah.
And let's apply it on a different business, right? And let's see what happens. You have your opener, right? Opening line. Today we're going to show you this, blah, blah, blah. The body of the video and then the closer. Follow me for more culture, right?
Yeah.
That was the series. And so they all kind of started doing well. And I'm like, oh, this is a marketing tool. This is not a social media platform. This is a tool business can use, right? So so that's what I was like, oh, let's see if we can use that for the culture, right? Let's highlight Salvadoran culture. According to the theory, if I start highlighting the culture, Salvadoranos are going to get the videos.
And that algorithm, dude, I got to tell you, say what you will about TikTok, man.
It's unmatched.
That algorithm is so precise and effective, and it's just enough where it doesn't sink you down the rabbit hole so deep that you're like, whoa, whoa. Like they mix it. What you have 10 interests, it's going to feed you just the perfect amount of each of those 10. Anyway, you're right. So okay, go on. So Salvadorian, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where I started doing like, okay, let's highlight the comedy. I'm a creative and I know this about myself, so I have to put parameters, right? Because if not, I'm start throwing darts everywhere.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do comedy, culture, food. Those are my three things that I'm going to focus on, right? And so that just keeps me in line. Like if it falls within those, all right, we're doing it.
Okay.
And so just started doing those. Just boom, consistent.
Okay. At that point, why was the culture so important to you? Why did you decide to use that as a platform to shine that positive light?
So when I was doing stand-up, right, I would do, again, Latino nights.
Yeah.
But I always felt like if Salvadoranos could hear this, I felt like they could connect.
Yeah.
Right? The 2-3 that were there connected. If I could just get a group, I think I could kill.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was the thought process. Like, can I get a group of like-minded individuals, right?
Yeah.
And that's what TikTok does. It finds you your group. And that's what I think is interesting with the comedy scene, right? So I started doing comedy 2002, 2003.
Okay.
Right? Before social media and, you know, the industry would choose who was the top dog, right?
Yeah, of course.
You had to go through Hollywood, right? They would choose who they would highlight.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't that many open spots, right? And so we're all fighting for that one spot.
Yeah.
Social media comes, right? And it's opening up the doors for different comedians.
Absolutely.
Now, right? You have Concrete who has his audience and he can find his audience. You have a Ralph Barboza who can find his audience, right? Alfred Robles who can find his audience. There is no top, there is no one.
Yeah.
There is an avenue for everybody now, right?
Following, yeah.
You find your niche, you find your audience that connect with you, right? And it's game over, right? You can build your own. Look at you.
right. I mean, again, different genre, but you're right, man. Because again, it's like people, I always say this, LA, they never really celebrated the history. Let me rephrase that. A lot of people don't think LA has that history and culture, but I'm just curious. And turns out a bunch of people care about that. So there you go. And who knew before? You know, you knew it's there, but you're like, oh, what am I going to go do some research? Like, but somebody presents it to you on a nice, easy to digest platform. You're like, oh shit, this is interesting, man. I like this guy. So, all right, good point.
But I think that's what, you know, not just social media, but I think TikTok did for many people.
Yeah.
And small businesses, really. Like, you take that formula, right, and like, well, I love that idea. I want that product, right?
Yeah.
Something that you don't find at a Walmart or some, you know, big box store. It's like, oh yeah, we'll support you. And it just finds your audience.
Right.
And you're able to grow, right?
Were you always, or at that point, let's say, right, when TikTok's starting to catapult you a little bit, were you really connected to the Salvadoran culture? Or were you like, man, I need to dig in. I want to like really... start to connect with this more. How was that relationship at that point?
So I always felt connected to it, right?
Yeah.
But as when I started doing content, I felt this sense of responsibility, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I got to do my research on this now. Like, is this the right term? Is this how you say it? Is this, you know, why am I presenting? So I did a series on Salvadoran words.
Okay.
And how you use them, right? And the how you use them was an example, a funny example of, you know, usually me doing something dumb of how to use the term. So I did a whole series, but yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, this is, I got to do my research. I'm going to make sure
right.
we present it right. What does it mean in English, right? What does mahe mean in English, right? What do these words mean?
Yeah.
And so mahe is like dude.
Okay.
But it has different ways of use. So you can use no seas mahe.
Yeah.
Don't be dumb. Don't be a dumbass.
Yeah.
Or mahe veni. Hey, dude, come here. So there's different ways of using it. Right?
Right.
So I thought, oh, well, if I'm learning about this, how can I make it digestible for the younger generation who's heard these terms,
yeah.
but maybe doesn't know the full meaning or how it's used? Yeah, I heard my uncle use it, but what does that mean?
So funny, yeah. And you kind of take it for granted at that point.
So I took that, you know, that route. I was like, well, now I'm the Salvadoran culture ambassador.
Yeah,
I got to do my research, right? So I'm taking that role. I was like, okay, let me figure this out. And I'm going to present it in a digestible way, right?
Yeah.
And that's how that all came about.
Okay. And then the career's taken off simultaneously, right? So you're getting noticed. Where was, as the profile is getting bigger on social media, where was that point where A, you realize you're like, all right, I really got something here. And people are responding well to the point that that's turning into like opportunities, life changing, career changing, all that kind of stuff. Where now you're, I mean, again, your own comedy special, that's big time, man. So where was that transition point? Was there a moment, I guess, let's say?
So for sure, the special was a transitional moment.
How'd that even come about?
Social media, bro. Social media.
Somebody just reached out.
So this is what's funny. So I've been doing comedy a long time. Do you remember VCast?
No.
Verizon started doing like these little videos on like flip phones, right? When videos were just starting to come on the phones.
Yeah.
And so this company called Comedy Time
Kay.
Would pay comedians $25 to do a 10-minute set at the Ice House.
Okay.
And then they would
Legendary venue, yeah.
They would take that video and start uploading it they sold it, I guess, to Verizon or AT&T, whoever. Okay. And so those clips started going out.
On flip phones,
on, you know, Verizon phones.
Buffering, yeah.
And so I had recorded a few videos for them. None of them did well. None of them went viral on the phones at that time.
Was there even viral back then? I mean, but...
So Angela Johnson was one of those, like, that had the nail salon bit. Like, she was part of that Comedy Time era. And so you would get a DVD of your set. And so in one of the DVDs, I did the joke, my Salvadoran bit about cero tres, right? The word cerote.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, this is funny. It's Salvadoran culture. I'm like, I'm going to upload it to YouTube myself, right? That was the first video that went kind of viral. I had like 10,000 views at that time on YouTube. I'm like, hell yeah.
For sure.
And so I left that clip. That clip's probably like 13 years old, 14 years old. So every year, some group of Salvadoranos would share it somewhere, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. It would get a bunch of views.
Yeah.
I think now it's like 100,000 views or whatever, but people would find this. So I left it on my YouTube channel. Somebody found it and uploaded it to TikTok. It had like 600,000 views, not on my account, right?
Yeah.
So I duet and I'm like, hey, this is me. I'm still doing comedy. We started Comedy Boobs and Beer. Like,
yeah.
Right. And so that clip does really well. And so at that time, Comedy Dynamics is putting on this comedy festival. And they want a group, they're doing like 16 comedy specials, and they want a diverse group of comedians.
Okay.
And so they have these, you know, people scouring the internet for different comedians.
Right, right.
My YouTube clip, you know, who just started going viral about talking about being Salvadoreño, gets their attention. And so all of a sudden, like, hey, they shoot me an email saying, hey, you know, we found you on social media. We love what you're doing, your comedy. We're doing this this festival. We want you to be a part of it. I thought it was a scam, right? You get these emails.
Of course, man.
I'm like, yeah, right. Like, who are these people? Research them. They're like a big comedy special production company. They work with, you know, all these big names.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy crap, this is real. And I told my wife about it. And I'm like, well, let's sit down and see what they have to offer. And we did it. And I'm like, all right, well, let's get to work. At that time, I had just started doing the comedy bubbles and beer kind of run.
Okay.
So I had my venue set up. So I'm writing a 1 hour special now. Like, I have an outlet to practice the 1 hour special, right?
Yeah.
I know what I want. It was so funny because the timing was crazy because my buddy, who's a filmmaker, we were talking about this concept of shooting a special,
yeah,
but for YouTube. And so the idea was to write an hour special or half hour special, but divide it into clips. So let's say the 30 minute clips are digestible TikToks.
Right. Right.
But you put it all together, it's a 1 hour special.
Interesting.
So I started writing in that way. So like, okay, well, I got to write this bit that fits within a minute and a half,
right,
2 minutes.
Right.
I don't want it longer than that because I want it to be able to edit and post it, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
So I already had that in my mind. Okay, I'm going to write it.
You know
this.
Your approach. Yeah. Yeah.
And so when I got this offer, I'm like, oh, I got it. Like this, we're just going to keep writing. Let's keep the same momentum, do the shows, practice it, record it, write it. And so when I got to the special, like that was the outcome of that whole, you know, journey of, wow, writing that special. And it's like after that, it's like, oh, well, now we have a special. What do we do? We've been doing comedy boosters and beer in LA all, right, over the place. Right. Let's take it national. Let's, yes, go all over the place. And so we did the national tour last year.
You have a management company? Like, how does that work?
Curtido TV, my, oh, wife and my...
Wow, dude. So what was the tour like?
Oh, it was eye-opening for me because I got to meet Salvadoreños all over the country. I got to meet Salvadoreños in Kansas.
Yeah.
We sold, wow, out a show in Kansas.
Yeah.
We had pupusas. It's crazy. We're everywhere. Salvadoreños were everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man.
Again, fifth largest immigrant group in the United States, right?
Third largest in the nation.
Jeez. Okay. Yeah.
So it was really eye-opening for me to be able to meet, you know, Salvadoreños from different backgrounds, you know, different, you know, parts of the world. And it's like, oh, man. Like, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're in Canada. We're in Australia.
Australia is a good one.
We're in Spain. Like, it's just crazy. I'm like, man, we are... all over the place.
Okay, so let's bring it back to LA for a sec. Give me, what's a day for you? What are some special places for you in Los Angeles? Not counting like my mom's house and stuff like that. Yeah. Like maybe that represent you and or Salvadorian culture.
Oh man, there's a lot of places. Yeah. So El Corredor.
Of course.
That's if si eres salvadoreño, that's the spot.
Yeah.
To get all your Salvadorian products. Pupuserias down La Pupusa downtown LA, right? Yeah. That's a big, if you're in LA, like that's the spot to go to. DTLA Pupusa, La Pupusa.
Okay.
They do the big Mamasota Pupusa.
Right, right.
It's what other spots? Shoot.
What does it mean to you in LA now that you're being embraced, that you have a bigger profile? And that you're kind of seeing the culture kind of get more respect and more attention.
Oh, man. So it's a sense of responsibility, really. That's like, good. You know, I know that my platform gets a large audience,
yes,
and it gets attention.
Don't be modest. Yeah, it is.
But it's important for me to highlight those other, you know, people that are doing stuff, right?
Right.
Like we've been working with AFJA, the nonprofit organization.
What's the organization?
AFJA, AFJA.
What is that?
So they're really the ones kind of like in the front lines with the big sports teams, with the LA Galaxy. They have pupusas with a purpose.
Okay.
And so they sell pupusas at the LA Galaxy. Part of the proceeds go to help kids in El Salvador, wow, and Central,
okay,
America.
Okay.
And so highlighting them is important because not only we get to do stuff here with them, we get to help kids in El Salvador and Central America, right? And like last year was our first time visiting like some of the soccer academies and watching these kids' faces light up and like they know what we're doing out here.
Yeah.
So that they're able to play on the field and have this soccer academy. And like, it was just crazy to see that the work we're doing here,
yeah,
has an impact.
That's awesome.
On the other side.
Yeah,
you know,
you get to see that, yeah, to live that, right? That's important.
And so I get the magnitude of like this platform. It's like, we got to highlight, you know, different people. I'm not alone. I'm not the only, you know, Salvadoreño highlighting the, yeah, culture. We have, you know, people like that. And Carla, who's writing a book.
Yep.
We have so many people who are highlighting the culture. Cynthia, who has another nonprofit organization. So many Salvadorians that are doing it.
Right.
And right. So it's always been like, okay, well, let's partner up with them. Let's see what they're doing. Okay, let's do this. Let's do that. Let's go here.
Because you do a lot of advocacy and you do a lot of community work, which is so important because it's not just, and again, it is just because you work hard for your craft too in the comedy. But again, and that's one of the main reasons why I really was looking forward to having you on, because it is something that's so important right now. And you are focused on that and being such a positive influence and having that positive impact. So, I mean, it's something to celebrate and really to embrace. And you are embracing that role. And it's really
self-appointed Salvadoran culture ambassador.
Dude, self-appointed, but others are making that connection and really realizing that.
But
man.
It is funny. Like, you know, it all started as a joke. It's like, oh, I'm the self-appointed Salvadoran culture ambassador. But now we're doing these big events and meeting important people. And I'm like, oh, yes, I'm the self-appointed Salvadoran culture ambassador.
What's next? What do you have upcoming?
Oh, man. So we're working on this project. I don't even know if we can talk about it, but hopefully it happens. I don't want to jinx it.
Okay. But ink is not dried. The pen is not hit the paper yet.
No. We're still waiting on some stuff. But okay. If that happens, that's going to be kind of fun. Wow. To be able to do.
What are your ultimate goals?
This is what I want. I'm gonna put out in the universe. I want to do a show in Australia. Ooh. And in Canada, and I want to find those displaced Salvadoreños.
How did you find out the fact that there are Salvadoreños in Australia, by the way?
So Australia gave asylum to Salvadoran refugees.
Yeah.
And so did Canada. And so Salvadoreños fled to Canada and Australia.
Man, Australia's a crazy one, because even just as a Californian, like, going to Australia, I'm like, bro, that's the literal opposite side of the world.
Like, and so I'll get messages from people like, hey, I saw your special. I'm in Australia. You know, I'm in Canada. So like, cool. We're here too. And it's just crazy to see, like, how far we are. And so that's been a goal of mine. Like, how can we get there? How can we bring what we're doing here?
Yeah.
In LA. That started in LA, by the way.
Yeah.
The Salvadoran Heritage Night started in LA.
That's
and they're snowballing slowly into, you know, different places. And I think that's a beautiful thing to be able to say, okay, we're pushing the culture.
Yeah.
Rolling it out here and see how far we can take it. Till the wheels fall off.
Dude, you gotta keep going. Okay, last thing. Are you passing are your kids receptive of the culture? Do they understand that impact yet that you're having? And are you kind of imbuing them with the Salvadorian pride and, you know, things of that nature?
Here's my daughter, who's older, they've decided. My son and my daughter, who are older, have decided. My daughter, because my wife is Mexican, she goes, well, I'm Mexican. And my son said, well, I'm Salvadorian. And the little Pandemia, who was born during pandemic, she says she's a putaco. So pupusa taco.
okay.
So she's both. My kids are like my son started watching my comedy special.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like I was watching him. He's watching my video clips like on YouTube.
Crazy. Yeah.
And I'm watching him. He's laughing. I'm like, he gets it. Like, he's... So it's very interesting to see them see me.
Yeah.
And like, we'll go places. People recognize me.
Yeah.
And so they'll count how many people recognize me. We're at Universal Studios. Like, oh, three people recognize Daddy.
Dude, that's something to be proud of, man. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you are somebody to be proud of. And what you're doing for not just the Salvadorian culture, but for all of LA is really awesome. I mean, look, you're such a positive guy and a positive spirit, and that comes across in your comedy and that comes across in your messaging. And honestly, just sitting here with you, it's like, man, I always, to probably a corny extent, like, really want to focus on the positivity and believing in people and putting that out there makes people and makes Los Angeles a better place. So I want to thank you having that kind of impact. Anything else that we should know that you want to leave people with? I mean, obviously, follow Jose on all the social media. Go check out the special. It's legit. It's good. It's Amazon funny. Prime. Amazon Prime. There you go.
Go to Jose.live for all the info for any show dates. To see what city I'm in next. And
dude,
right now we're just kind of waiting for this project and see if it happens.
How's the travel, real quick? How's that lifestyle? How's the travel?
You know, it was last year. It was interesting because it was the first time I did like a national tour. Every month, I'm, you know, somewhere out, you know, out and about, airports, traveling. And it was the first time my kids, like, oh, daddy's gone for 3 days, 4 days.
Dude, that's rough, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a relief in some capacity, but it's rough.
But credit to my wife. I couldn't do this if my wife wasn't there, you know.
Truly the better half, man. Yeah. Truly.
My manager, and she runs the household, runs my career, and... You know,
as it should be, dude. Jose Velasquez, Jose, thank you for coming in, man. Big things ahead for the man, for the community, for the culture. Really appreciate you, and everybody watching, thank you so much. Like, share, subscribe, but follow this man. He's awesome. He's hilarious, and let's keep making LA a better place and shining a positive light on everybody here. Thank you, Los Angeles. And all right, LA.
One more last thing.
Yeah, shoot it.
People always ask me, Jose, what is the best pupusa spot?
Uh-oh. I didn't want to, because that's a tough go.
So I'm gonna give you my, all right. There is no best pupusa. It is up to you to find your best pupusa spot. You have to go on a pupusa journey and find your best pupusa.
That's absolutely right. Wise words right there, and a great answer from a great dude. All right, LA, it's been a minute.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, how will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.